the Underdog Podcast from SB Nation and Underdog Dynasty.
All right, just like Southern Miss fans during our preseason power rankings or April snow in the Midwest, we are back with the Underdog Podcast. How do you like that intro, boys?
Perfect. That is what we've been waiting for.
My name's Joe Brobeck. I'm hosting this time because none of these guys can do it. Okay, just kidding. Joe just made me do it, and that's the only reason why I'm doing this. I'm your host, Joe Brobeck. You can find me on Twitter at Joe Brobeck. My usual host, Joe Serpico, is with us as well. Say hello to the friends.
Hello, College Football Nation.
And
good
we're
to be on the other side here.
Yeah, flipping roles today. I like that. And we are blessed to be joined by our Conference USA podcast people. First, we have Eric Henry.
What's going on, guys? Thanks for making this momentous occasion come together.
Perfect. And Mr. Qdoba himself, Joe Londrigan.
Hi. I definitely don't have food in my mouth right now.
Because you guys probably don't know, we were critiquing Joe's manners, which were very good, by the way, and some of us agreed with his choices at Qdoba and some of us disagreed, but that's neither here nor there. So we are going to do a special NFL podcast today. We're going to start with Conference USA, we'll move on to the AAC, and then we'll talk about a few other people from the Sun Belt and even the FCS level. So I'll just start with a question to lead Joe and Eric into their conference. Is there a player in Conference USA that will go in the first round?
Joe, I'll let you take the lead because I normally am talking over you on the podcast.
No, you're fine. I'm going to say no. I think the top prospect in Conference USA is probably Devin Singletary. And I think he's a solid second or third round guy. But I think Eric would agree with me that he's just like the most NFL ready player in that league. Perfect combination of size and speed. Had some issues last year with that FAU offense, obviously, but the year before that was just tearing dudes up. Had a solid enough showing at the combine. So I think he's definitely going to be the guy that is the most likely to like get significant playing time in the NFL right away. But I don't think he's a first round pick.
So quick about him is, so his catches dropped off significantly last year. Was that because of the offense or what happened with that?
His catches?
Yeah, he had like six catches last year. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that quarterback spot was definitely not as like dependable as it was the year before. And if you listen to our podcast, we just kind of got done talking about Chris Robinson having issues on top of some of the other younger guys that came into that program. But to answer your question, yeah, there was some inconsistency at the quarterback spot. So I think if you go back and look, pretty much everybody's catches dropped off a little bit.
Yeah, I'd go ahead and disagree with Joe there. As far as Devin Singletary, in my opinion, definitely would be the first Conference USA player selected. I think Nate Davis from Charlotte, who was a guard, who had a very good pro day, would be right behind him. But all in all, Singletary should be the first Conference USA player selected. And to answer the question about the catches, that's a point that Jake Ullman made on our podcast as well, is that with the inconsistent quarterback play between Chris Robinson and some of the other guys who played, it just was a matter of the offense as a whole didn't function like it did with Jason Driscoll there. So that's really what kind of attributed to his production out of the backfield as far as being a receiver going down. That's what you can attribute that to.
All right, so I can kind of jump in here with my question about Singletary. And then he ran a 4.66 at the combine, and I know that kind of scares some people off. Can you guys give us maybe a little bit of update? Has that number obviously gone up since his pro day? And do you either of you think that is going to hurt his stock? Because, I mean, if I remember correctly, that was the slowest time at the combine as well for a running back.
I don't know about if his time – I don't know if his time improved at his pro day. I haven't taken a look at that in a couple of days, so I don't remember off the top of my head. But in terms of just his overall ability, I think what you got to remember with him is, you know, he's durable, and I think that goes a long way in the NFL. I mean, you see guys that just have quickness, but don't necessarily have like the build to take hits day in and day out, like he does. But I think just his whole complete, you know, package, I guess, is better for, you know, it's a good NFL fit. And I don't think that the fact that he ran as a kind of a slower 40 time at the combine should scare too many people off. But, you know, I get how NFL scouts think, and that happens sometimes.
Yeah, once again, you know, I'll just kind of co-sign what Joe said there. As someone who saw Devin Singletary twice in person with the UCF game and against FIU, the 4.66, I mean, it's not great. It's not bad either. I mean, I know Elijah Holyfield from Georgia ran like a 4.85 or 4.9. So at least you're not, you know, in that kind of territory. But here's the thing about Singletary. He is quick. He ran away from the FIU defense. Now, you know, play devil's advocate, there weren't too many running backs who didn't run away from the FIU defense this year. But with that being said, he definitely is faster in pads, and I think he's very shifty. That will help him maybe offset some of that, the 40-yard dash time. But one thing about him, like Joe said, he has a great compact build, so he's hard to bring down, and he is really shifty. So the 40 time shouldn't really be an issue.
Who else are you guys looking forward to seeing come draft day, or like the day one or day two?
Joe, you want to take the lead?
It would
on that
be or? Awesome if Jack Fox squeaked into day two. I'll say that. yeah, for Rice, if you don't know Jack Fox, probably the best punter in the nation, just based on like form and all that. And he was also Rice's kicker for a little bit, but I think he's going to play mostly punter in the NFL. But yeah, this guy's getting like comparisons to like Michael Dixon already. So I think he'll find a place in the NFL if someone's looking for a punter. But obviously that's super uncommon. So I would say look for him to get drafted, but probably not on day two, maybe day three.
Yeah, once again, I'll co-sign with Joe. So there, as far as Fox, I think he's obviously one of the best punters in not only Conference USA, but in the nation. So I don't think he'll be a day two pick, but he'll definitely get drafted. Two of the guys who I think will get drafted, or actually three, Tyree Brady, Nate Davis, and O'Shane Zimenez. The person who I think out of that group will get drafted directly behind Devin Singletary would probably be O'Shane Zimenez, just because there's a premium on pass rushers in this day and age as far as the NFL goes. And he's someone who just had over 35 sacks. I think it was 37 sacks he finished with his career at Old Dominion. So he's a proven pass rusher, pretty athletic. I mean, he's not going to wow you as far as speed, but he just knows how to get to the quarterback. Quick note on Brady and Davis. Tyree Brady started his career at UM or finishing up at Marshall. And he's got that prototypical wide receiver size, you know, 6'2", 6'3", 210 pounds. Really solid build, ran a 4.4, 4.49 at Marshall's Pro Day. So he's someone you should probably look for to get drafted. And same thing with Davis. He kind of came out of nowhere at Charlotte. When I was at FIU's Pro Day, I asked Anthony Johnson, who is a defensive tackle for FIU, who's one of the toughest linemen he ever faced in his career at Conference USA. And the first name that came out of his mouth was Nate Davis. So he's a guy who, once again, maybe not day two, but, you know, somewhere in that third, fourth, or fifth round range, you should probably see Nate Davis go off the board.
Now, I want to ask you, I mean, we kind of talked about this a little bit off air, so I guess I just want to bring it up now. Eric kind of mentioned the one guy that you guys felt maybe got snubbed out of he was originally invited, but then they kind of retracted that, and that is Louisiana Tech's Jalen Ferguson. So I don't think there's any argument that he's going to get drafted, because we've seen plenty of these guys who've had incidents in their past like this. I mean, the first one that comes to my mind is Joe Mixon. I mean, he went all the way up in the second round, and that was on video for everyone to see. I mean, Ferguson's just literally came out of the blue trying to do a background check, which was, it kind of, you know, was a little bit awkward, let's be honest. So what is your guys' assessment on him?
Really quick, to compare and I'm not saying you are making that comparison, you know, it's just probably the first thing that comes to mind, but to compare the Jalen Ferguson thing to Joe Mixon, that's like apples and oranges. You know, we all know what happened with Joe Mixon as far as, you know, him punching a woman on camera. Jalen Ferguson got in a fight at McDonald's when he was a freshman.
And that a boy. Sure, nice.
Yeah, I'm sure, you know, between the four of us, we've been in a fight or two, you know, even Londergan up there in Pacific Northwest, I'm sure, you know, he's been in the rager once or twice about a debate about Pearl Jam or Nirvana or, you know, Dave Matthews Band. So, I mean, it happens, you know, you can't.
No, mine was at a McDonald's too. The McFlurry machine was broken and I just went apeshit.
Can't wait to see if they messed up this Qdoba order.
All right, I'm making a decision. We're no longer doing separate podcasts. They're all always doing four people on podcasts. This is great.
Listen, it works with me. I mean, just to finish up that point really quick, I mean, Ferguson, like you guys mentioned, he'll get drafted, but the background checking, I mean, dude got in a fight at McDonald's. I mean, you know, bleep happens. So it's not like he was, you know, it was an egregious offense.
I agree. As a player, he's, you know, it was arguably, well, not arguably, he was the best defensive player in Conference USA last year. So, I mean, some team will give him a shot. I mean, like you mentioned, far from the worst defense we've seen an NFL player commit or whatever. And it was several years ago. So I think, you know, he'll find a home somewhere, and he's definitely got the natural ability to compete for a spot.
Just don't let him go to McDonald's, right?
Yeah. I mean,
don't let you go to McDonald's either.
Anyway, but well, right. Yeah. Wendy's for life.
All right. So who else on day three, or maybe even an undrafted free agent, who else are you guys going to be watching on day three? Not that many people watch day three of the draft, but who will you guys be paying attention to on day three or after?
Probably Azeez Al-Shaair, just because, like, he had a good enough playing career, but, like, had that brutal knee injury last year. And I mean, on one of our more recent episodes, we talked about how the re-injury risk is definitely there. Like, we've seen it happen in the NFL before. So it's definitely going to be hard to kind of bounce back and get into the kind of contact that you need to as a linebacker in the NFL. But I mean, if he can stay healthy, then that'd be great. But, you know, I can't see too many teams, you know, being that high on him, seeing as he hasn't been able to do anything lower body for a while.
Yeah, I think Joe's a little higher on Azeez Al-Shaair than I am. I think he's just one of those guys, and this isn't to diminish his career. You know, some guys can rack up the tackles in college and doesn't really translate to the NFL. You want to add on to that the injury, so I'm not necessarily as high on him. I think he'll be a free agent. But Malik Gant, safety from Marshall, you know, there's always room for defensive backs who can play in the box and also kind of play the pass. And Malik Gant was able to do both of those things during his career at Marshall. And Travis Fulgham from ODU, I mean, he had a nice Senior Bowl. And I didn't even think he was the best receiver on his team, to be honest. I thought John Duhart was better. But I think those two guys, you know, you may see them on day three, day four, or UFAs.
Joe, you got any more questions for our fellows here?
Not until a little bit later. I've got a particular.
All right. Well, if you two have any more, go ahead. You got any more guys to talk about? Go for it. Otherwise, we can just flip to you guys and start with your questions.
I mean, I can easily turn this into the FIU podcast, and I wish I named, you know, all 17 guys who should be drafted, but I'll spare you guys the sake of the pod. So yeah,
we'll talk to you next week, Eric. Then.
Nah, guys, I'm good on this end.
All right, what you got,
Londergan, you finished wiping the queso off your mouth to ask a question, or should I go first?
Yeah.
Damn. I'll cede my time to you for this first part.
Of course he will.
Oh man, I'm gonna be in for it when we do after this call. I guess we'll start with the obvious. Ed Oliver. He's a name who has been, you know, much ballyhooed throughout college football through his entire career. What's the deal? You know, I mean, is he, I see some mock drafts kind of having him going in the 10 to 15 range. And to be honest, I just think, and Brobacks made a lot of points about this as far as his actual agility, you know, his work in the shuttle, that I think he's definitely a top five talent. So I guess a two-part question. One, where do you guys think he'll actually go? And two, what is would be the hesitation for a team with Ed Oliver?
Joe, I'll defer to you since you are our Houston guy, and then I'll follow.
Well, I've been saying that he's a top five talent, and he is, but as we've seen in the NFL, that doesn't always mean that they go top five. Just because various teams have various different needs, and when you have guys like Quinnen Williams and Nick Bosa that are also in the draft, like that probably pushes him back. So I think he'll probably go top 15 if we're being realistic. I think the biggest thing that I've seen with him is people are worried about his size. I think a lot of scouts, they learned that they thought that he played under 280 pounds. And this year he was playing at nose tackle because, without going off too much on a tangent, Houston's defensive coordinator had no idea what he was doing. If you're putting Ed Oliver at nose tackle, like that's not a good idea. And especially if he's playing at like 270 pounds. So I think the biggest thing with him is his size, that to go with that. People are concerned about his length. I don't know if that's actually something to be concerned about. If you watch his film, like I think you're at that point, you're just kind of nitpicking to find something that's wrong with him. Because if you watch his film, he gets off the ball, he disrupts plays, and the fact that he requires double and triple teams on a regular basis for most of his college career says that he's worth the pick that he's going to get picked at. Now, people, mostly fans, are probably going to bring up Jacket Gate, if you want to call it that. And honestly, it's not an issue. It's a one-time thing. Like, there's been nothing else that would make you concerned about him throughout the rest of his career. So I think that's just going to – everybody's going to forget about that. And he's not going to be Aaron Donald because they're different players, even though they get compared a lot. But he's going to be a successful NFL player.
To pick you back off of Joe, I mean, he said top 15. I'll go as far to say I think he'll be in top 10. Maybe a couple months ago I would have said top five, but it looks like, of course, all the quarterbacks are getting bumped up way earlier than they should be. And I am one of those people that think that the Cardinals are blowing a lot of smoke, hoping somebody will move up to get Kyler Murray. But to bring it back to Oliver, I mean, me and Joe, we've hyped on this guy for, 2.5-3 years now. We've talked about how we have felt this guy has been a top 10 talent. And what are we now, 2 weeks away? I think it's about time for us to pat ourselves on the back, Joe. Let's just put it that way. I mean, he fits all the parts other than what Joe just said, his size. Otherwise, what else can you argue against this guy?
He makes up for it with his play. Like, size really isn't that big of an issue.
And like I was just about to say, his motor just makes up for it, I think. You know, even if he's going to be beat on a play, I mean, he's just one of those guys. All right, he'll run you down. I think one of the more impressive things that I saw lately was, I can't remember if exactly was his three cone or his shuttle, was in comparison to some of the best wide receivers in the league, which is wide receivers and running backs, I should say, which is just absurd. So the guy is a freak talent. And this day and age where, let's be honest, there's a premium on guys who can get to the quarterback, Oliver's going to be one of those guys. So for me, he deserves to be in that top 10, no question. I can think of at least three teams that could use him in that top 10.
I think I would be remiss being the UCF grad if I didn't ask this question. And I'm going to pair it with another player, just not to make this a whole UCF deal. But I was surprised. I'm looking at the NFL Combine participant list right now, and the second highest graded player, according to that website, from the American is Tristan Hill. And I mean, like, I saw his entire career, you know, having went to UCF and still following the team. And I thought he was a nice player, but I didn't think he's the second best player. I mean, you're talking about guys like Daryl Henderson and Reichwell Armstead and and Rock Ya-Sin and Tristan Hill is the second highest graded player. Just what are you guys' thoughts on that really quick?
Well, I think he's obviously Ed Oliver steals that spotlight in that conference. You know, UCF has had their run of whatever, 25 straight games winning, but I think the focus had to be more on like the offense and then, you know, the coaching changes. So the defense kind of gets swept under the rug, especially with the struggles in this conference to stop anybody. And I think because Hill really only started like one full season. I mean, he played the year before, but he wasn't a starter. I think he kind of just gets overlooked. If you look at him, he looks solid, but then the most surprising thing was, yeah, that grade that he got, and then he performed well. I think his 40 time was sub five, if I remember correctly. Could be wrong, but he put in the work, and now he's setting himself up for potentially a day two draft call.
That, I mean, he dominated the combine from what I remember. I remember the guys at the NFL Network, and now that Mayock's not there, I can't remember exactly who it was, but I know they were raving about him for much of the show. So I know Hill is somebody that he caught a lot of eyes there, obviously. And then, I mean, Joe kind of alluded to it perfectly. I mean, Oliver stole the show. That's a position. I wouldn't even say the position. I would just say the entire defensive line, because there's a lot of guys that I felt like in the conference that maybe got overlooked in relations to how they actually perform.
I mean, I think personally, you know, just my two cents, I think the thing with Tristan is having gone through two different defenses between Scott Frost and Josh Heupel, maybe that affected his playing time. But, yeah, I mean, you guys mentioned it. He ran, I think it was a 4.9 40. Which coming for his size is like insane. But yeah, I mean, I guess I just was surprised that, I mean, I was surprised that he actually came out and then surprised that he was graded so highly among the conference. So
I wish he would have stayed another year.
Same.
Yeah, I'm right there.
No arguments with that. Is there a reason for it? Do you know whether there's a reason for it? Was there a financial reason for it, or he just,
I haven't heard anything.
Academic reason.
Who knows?
I mean, just from what I've read with being, you know, around the team and at the Orlando Sentinel and stuff like that, all I've ever read is that there were a couple of guys who just felt like this was the highest point as far as, you know, you mentioned the 25 straight wins. This is going to be the peak of UCF. The same thing with Dredrick Nelson Jr. deciding to leave early. I think some of those guys just felt that, you know, this might have been the peak of the UCF exposure, and why not try to capitalize on it?
That makes sense.
That does make sense. I'm with that.
Does De'Aaron King have one more year, or did I make that up?
Yeah, he's a senior this year.
Okay.
Don't make him cry.
I won't.
I already cried when Ed Oliver left. Don't make me cry more.
All right, I'll try. I can't make any promises, but just because I'm an offensive line nerd, who are some of the top OL prospects you guys think are going to either get drafted or at least, you know, make a roster right away out of the American?
Joe, it's your favorite position group, so you want to start with them?
Jesus, I don't even have any offensive linemen written down. I'm not going to lie to you.
Well, the one that everybody's going to talk about is Trayvon Tate from Memphis, just because he got a combine invite. He's been saying a bunch of stuff on Twitter and whatnot, saying that he believes he's the best lineman in the draft and whatnot. So I think he's the one that to keep an eye on. Now, while I think it's funny that he's saying all these things, I do think he is a solid prospect, and some team is going to get a good player in him. I just don't think he's as good as he thinks he is. Honestly, I don't know. After that, he's probably the only one that I will pay attention to. I don't know, honestly, if I even will know if anybody else gets picked.
I want to like take that to the next thing. So he's building himself up, but how much of that is him looking good because of the two running backs that are also coming out in this draft from Memphis?
Well, Memphis' offensive line just in general was solid. You had Drew Kaiser, who started for 4 years at center, and you had two or three other guys that started, like, two other guys that started 2 years. So I think that had a lot to do with it. If you watch Tate's film, it's not, he doesn't like dominate anybody frequently. He has his moments, but there's not like a time where you're like, he's easily the best guy on their team. I think it was a matter of they had five good dudes up front. And also, like you said, Daryl Henderson and Patrick Taylor were special.
Got it.
You guys mentioned the Memphis running backs. Let's just, you know, the elf in the room. Daryl Henderson, is he the best running back that is going to come from the G5 ranks?
Ever or this year?
not ever in this draft class.
Oh, well, that's Joe telling you what he thinks about Henderson right there, because he thinks he's great.
I think he is great because he used to be – so 2 years ago, 2 and 3 years ago, he used to just be a speed guy, and obviously you saw his speed this year. But if you watched him from 2 years ago and 3 years ago to this year, or to this past year, I should say, you would see how, like, he added weight. He worked on his pass-catching ability. Like, he made himself a well-rounded running back, and I think that's the biggest thing that – it's the biggest reason why I'm so high on him, is he has the speed already, which you can't, I mean, you can teach to a point and you can work on, but he's got that breakaway speed that you just can't teach. And the other things that he needed to work on were things that he could work on or learn from a coach and whatnot. So it's just, he put it all together this year. And the fact that he had almost 2,000 yards rushing and Patrick Taylor had 1,000 yards rushing, like, that says a lot about how good they are.
The game that really summed it up for me was the American Championship game. You know, I got a chance to cover that one for Underdog Dynasty, and I mean, you guys saw how he just took over the game. So yeah, I mean, I'm definitely impressed by him. I mean, I guess heading into the year, I thought that Rykel Armstead was right there with him, but no, he was head and shoulders away, far away better than Rykel Armstead, in my opinion.
Don't say that to Joe too loud.
No, well, I was just about to agree with you, actually. I mean, obviously, I'm the Temple alum here, and I've loved everything we've gotten from Armstead, but I can't have any argument with that. I mean, Henderson is just a game changer. I mean, me and Joe have talked about how we feel like Armstead has been more of a guy that, you know, gets you your first downs when you need them, and honestly, I'll be honest, I was surprised by his 40 time being the fastest or second fastest for running backs. That kind of threw me off a little bit, because that's not the Rykel Armstead that I was used to seeing. I feel like he's not the same home run threat that Henderson is. I feel like every time you give Henderson the ball, he's a threat to take it to the house. I never felt that way about Armstead.
Unless they play Houston and he has 6 touchdowns.
Well, I mean, that's just because Houston doesn't play defense. But I kind of want to, flip this question a little bit back to you guys, because there is a lot of similarities, I would think, especially in body type. I would say in the way that Singletary and Daryl Henderson kind of measured out. So I guess between the three of you, kind of, which one of those two do you think will have the better NFL career?
I'll say Singletary. Go ahead. Yeah, I'll say Singletary, just because I think I've watched more of his tape, so I can just say that with more confidence. But, you know, I think they'll both have pretty decent careers.
I honestly was surprised. I haven't had a chance to see both of them in person. I was surprised how similar, like, body frame and build they are. They are really similar in size. I think Devin might be like 5'7", whereas Daryl Henderson's like 5'9". But, I mean, they are virtually the same in terms of just body composition. If you're asking me, maybe because, you know, just piggyback off what Lonergan said as far as having seen more of Devin Singletary, I probably would lean more towards Devin. But I also think maybe I'm a little biased, but I think Daryl Henderson had more at his disposal at Memphis in terms of talent around him. And I think that Devin Singletary, more or less, not that FAU doesn't have talented guys like Harrison Bryant and Javon Durante, Willie Wright, et cetera. But I mean, like, Devin Singletary was kind of the man. So I think the only knock against Devin is that he had a lot of carries, whereas Darrell Henderson did get a chance to share the load with Patrick Taylor. But all in all, I'd go with Devin by a slight edge.
I'm the opposite, but I'm probably biased because I didn't watch. I'm like Londrigan. I'm the opposite. I didn't watch Devin a lot. I watched Darrell every single game, so that's why I say him.
This popped into my head as we were talking. Are there any good G5 tight ends in this draft now that we're thinking about it? Because, like, I can't think of any from CUSA. There's none from the Sun Belt. Are there any good American ones that I'm missing?
I have one written down, and that's only because I saw him in one mock draft. It is McCants from USF. And I think me and Joe can both say, like, he's never really done anything spectacular to make me think that he's worth being drafted, but he popped up in one of the mock drafts that I saw.
Well, and he played receiver at USF, but he's so big. Like, yes, he just gained a
game. That's why, like, yeah, he was listed at tight end, and that's why I was like, I don't even know if I want to write him down as a tight end, because that's not
the one game that he did well was the 2017 game against UCF. He had like 200 yards receiving and like three touchdowns or something. Something insane. But that's pretty much it. So, no, yeah, to answer your question.
I actually was surprised that you guys mentioned McCants, but you did mention that he played receiver at USF. Because, yeah, I mean, he's like 5'10", 5'11", 240.
That's a big dude.
He is a wide dude. I'm trying to think of who would be an NFL comp. Come on, I'm having a brain fart right now. Tight end used to be with Tennessee, played the 49ers.
Delanie Walker.
Delanie Walker. But Delanie Walker may be like 6'2", 6'3". But I just remember Delanie Walker came in as a wide receiver and kind of just fell into that tight end role and had a nice career. So maybe that could be a comp. But, yeah, I mean, outside of that, yeah, I can't think of anything else for McCants.
I guess a better way to phrase that question would have been, is there a tight end in the conferences that we cover? Because obviously we don't sit and watch the Mountain West and stuff every weekend.
Joe, Lonergan, let me ask you this. If Harrison Bryant had come out this year, I mean, do you think he would have been far and away as far as the conference we cover the best? Because, I mean, it was neck and neck as far as whether he was going to come out or stay. I think he would have been a nice prospect and probably will be next year.
Yeah. You know, it's not like the year before where the Juracek from Marshall was like, you know, far and away. There were, you know, it was probably Bryant and like, you know, like one or two other guys in those offenses that really kind of couldn't really get much else going passing wise, like WKU did 2 years ago. But yeah, it was probably him, if we're being honest.
I've got a question for the American guys. Is there anyone who wasn't invited to the combine who we, you know, should be paying attention to or should know leading up to the draft?
I'll let Joe answer that because there's one guy I think we really agreed on.
I've got two, but I think the one that we agreed on was the Delvin Randall.
Yep.
From Temple. Then for me, the other one is another Temple guy, and that was Michael Dogby, who, I mean, he lit up the Senior Bowl, and to be honest, he was one of the few that was kind of stunned to not get an invite, and then did so once again at the Pro Day for Temple. But yeah, I think me and Joe both will say that Delvin Randall, I mean, 4-year starter, literally owns so many records at Temple, I don't even know where to start. A guy that honestly, I mean, just considering how Temple has almost a lineage now of safeties coming out almost every year, I thought it was almost a guarantee that he would at least get an invite to the combine. But for some strange reason, that didn't pan out that way. I personally think he will get drafted day three. If not, he's going to be a steal as an undrafted free agent.
Well, and it's not like he just had these stats and he doesn't, like, physically he doesn't look good. Like, guy can hit, he can run, he has ball skills, and I don't know.
He fits everything. That's why I was stunned. He fits everything that you're looking for in his safety, the stats, the measurables, everything. Like I said, a four-year starter, which, I mean, in college football, I mean, let's be honest, you don't see a lot of four-year starters at defense, especially. And he did that for Temples, who had one of the top passing defenses, and that is a lost art in college football right now, and he was the leader on that passing defense. So that's why it kind of surprises me. Granted, he did have some help. I guess this is the point where I bring up Rocky Sin, who's looking like he might be a first-round pick. He'd definitely probably go in the second round, if not. And that's another guy who, he showed up on Temple's campus maybe 10 months ago, and we didn't even know what this guy was going to be, considering he was coming from Presbyterian. And like I said, he might go in the first round. Part of Temple's amazing secondary that they had up there. For some reason, Randall's not getting a nod. So, yeah, that for me is the one huge snub that I didn't understand as far as the combine. It almost brings back to Shaquin Griffin, because if you think about it, Griffin didn't get an invite until there was, like, all that outrage about him. You know what I mean? But he was one of those guys that, like going into the year, or going into the original combine thing, you're like, how is he not getting any love when he's one of the better players in the American? I don't know if it's like they're trying to slight the American. I don't understand what's the point in that. Nine guys from the American, I think, is not enough, personally.
I don't have anything more to add to that. Joe pretty much said everything that needed to be said about Randall, and then his opinion on the number of prospects.
I just was going to quickly piggyback off that and say, it's funny you mentioned that, because I completely agree with you. I think a lot of the you know, quote unquote small conference or non-power conference guys get overlooked. I mean, there's a couple of guys in CUSA who, you know, I won't go through a list of all of them, but there are a couple of guys who I think, based off their playing career, at least could have earned combine invites, because if they're not going to get the senior bowl, you know, the East-West bowl, East-West Shrine Bowl, should get a chance to showcase their talent. You know, a guy like Josiah Toafa from UTSA, who just did nothing but tackle people for 3 years, I feel like he deserved an invite. I don't know if Lon is going to agree or disagree, but yeah, I mean, I think nine from the American and seven or eight, I believe, from CUSA is a little light.
I mean, yeah, I. Oh, sorry, but
queso.
Yeah, no, I'm. I didn't even have anything in my mouth that time. I would say with Josiah. I would say if there's like one other guy that probably deserved an invite out of CUSA, it was probably him. But I mean, this was just kind of a light year for the league. I think there were a lot of guys in this league who I think made fine college football players, but you can just kind of. You can say with a certain degree of confidence that there's not, you know, a spot for them in the NFL, at least right now. But, you know, I think with at least in terms of CUSA, I think they got it pretty much right. I don't think I have any more questions about the American stuff. You guys pretty much covered everything I was curious about.
Cool. So who would... And then, well, Joe Lonergan brought up Jalen Moore before in the Sun Belt, but we can kind of tie in FCS and the Sun Belt together since they're basically the same, in my opinion, anyways. Okay. No, two shots fired. we can talk about Jalen Moore, but is there anybody else in the Sun Belt or even in the FCS level that you guys are interested in?
Oh, man, let me grab my notes. I should have done this on the fly, instead of doing it on the fly.
I have one question that I want to ask is, so Easton Stick from NDSU is coming out, and I feel like he's getting kind of like the NDSU Carson Wentz treatment. Granted, you know, he's a projected 7th round pick, but I don't know if you guys watched him at all, but does anybody feel like he can be like Carson Wentz, or do you think he's just not good enough?
There's only one Carson Wentz.
Well, thanks, Joe. Thanks, Einstein.
I haven't seen a ton of him, but I mean, like, I just felt I agree with you. Like, it's the NDSU thing. Like, all right, you know, Carson Wentz, then we got Easton Stick. Even Wentz was a guy who, like, I didn't really fall in love with until the combine and whatnot. But yeah, I think it's a bit of a far reach to go from Carson Wentz to Easton Stick. So maybe career backup at best.
Yeah, I think go ahead. Sorry.
All I was going to say was, I think just with quarterbacks, it was kind of this way the year Wentz got drafted too. There's just clear needs. You know what I mean? I guess like each team, you could see which teams were clearly going to be looking for QB1 going into it. And I think that's more or less the same here. And I think there's just more, you know, higher profile guys who are probably going to fill that role before you get to the guys like, you know, like this kid, you know.
I mean, for me, it's more, he's the beneficiary of North Dakota State just being so dominant for so long. That's the way I see it. I mean, he's just been the next quarterback in line to keep North Dakota State's legacy of winning going. But that's, I think, it's just more the numbers are helping him out than the play. And we've seen that with plenty of quarterbacks over the years.
Right. That's what I figured. Eric, you were going to talk about a safety.
Yeah. Sorry, I had to grab my notes. I got a little mixed up here. But the FCS safety I was talking about was Nasir Adderley from Delaware. I don't know if anyone has even heard of him, but he's a
beast. That kid's a monster.
Yeah. He you know, picked off Tyree Jackson a handful of times at the Senior Bowl, but he was the one guy who, just from, you know, doing a little research, and I ended up seeing a Delaware game this year on an FIU bye week, and he just stood out, like you said, just all over the field. So that's a guy who I know he like injured his hamstring at Pro Day during his first 40-yard dash, mm-hmm. but he's a guy who's, he may very well be a day one pick if, you know, all things fall his way.
Yeah, I've seen him for the most part in a lot of the in day ones, I've seen him around in 20-25 range. He gets a lot of hype from here in Maryland just because Delaware is, you know, it's not that far away, and as a Baltimore guy, the Ravens could use him. As a Philly fan, they're talking about him too. So I've been seeing a lot of talk about this kid. So, and he always seems to pop up on whether it be Facebook or Twitter or whatever that be. And I always see these videos. I'm like, man, this kid he's damn good. I see why there is a lot of hype about him. And it kind of does shock me that he was a Delaware kid, that he wasn't picked up by any of these other colleges. I mean, kind of like Rock Ya-Sin, how, you know, he went from Presbyterian to a bigger program. I'm kind of surprised that he did not.
So is this the Joe Flacco effect, like the Carson Wentz effect, right? Because he went to Delaware. So it's Joe Flacco's, you know, is it the reason that he's getting drafted so high? Right? Same thing. Carson Wentz for Easton Stick. Oh, come on, man.
They don't play the same position. One. I mean, where do you want to start there?
Well, he has to guard.
I mean, Joe Flacco is a legend at Delaware. Let's just be honest. I mean, that guy's the legend there.
That's true.
But he wasn't good enough to beat Palco or whatever that guy's name was. Who was that Pitt quarterback back in the day? Was it Palco?
I don't know. I don't know if you know, but I'm not a huge Pitt football fan.
Oh, you loved him.
I don't have too many guys to talk about. Lonergan, you want to talk about Jalen Moore?
Sure. I think of the Sun Belt guys, he's probably got the best shot to make something of himself. Obviously, a huge part of what App State did the last 2 years. So I think, you know, and obviously didn't go against you know, some of the same kind of defenses that a lot of the other running backs in this draft had the benefit of going against, at least when you know, talk resumes or whatever. But he's got the quickness. He's got the, he's got the speed, but I don't think he's, you know, I think just the Sun Belt, you know, I won't say they're basically an FCS conference like you did, but I think, you know, in terms of talent, there's not too many people out of that league that are really blew me away this year.
Well, I'm going to agree with Joe Brovac because it is another FCS conference.
Don't tell FCS fans that.
But so I wanted to highlight, I mean, we talked about one wide receiver before the show, and that would be Andy Isabella, the UMass wide receiver. I think all of us are in agreement that we really like this guy.
Mm-hmm. Didn't he run like a 4.2?
Well, I have marked down here 4.3. But if he ran, it would have surprised me if he ran a 4.31. So if he ran a 4.2 at his pro day, and I don't have that, that wouldn't surprise me too. But I mean, he's the epitome of what the NFL is looking for right now in the slot receiver. And I think he's going to fill that role beautifully. The only knock against him, I think you could really say, is he's at a small school, but he took full advantage of that.
Didn't he have 200 yards against Georgia?
He did. He had like 209 against Georgia.
Yeah, and he had like 303 against like Liberty or something like that.
Wow.
Right? I'm looking it up.
No, you're
303. Yeah,
you are right.
13 catches for 303 yards and 3 touchdowns or whatever.
No, you're, and I mean, from what I remember, I think you're correct on that one.
Then the other wide receiver that kind of stuck out to me, and it made me really do a serious double take. So I'm going through the list of prospects, and I see a Reggie White Jr., wide receiver from Monmouth, and I'm like, wait a second. Not that Reggie White's kid, right? Well, I also learned that did you guys know that there was another Reggie White in the NFL?
Yeah. Oh.
I didn't know that.
Do your research, man. Come on.
Apparently, well, now I know that after doing my research. But apparently, he was a defensive lineman for the Chargers and the Pats back in the day. So, like, it's just a heritage. But when I saw that, I immediately had to look this kid up, and I'm like, wait a second. It can't be the son of the legendary, the club, Reggie White. But no, I was wrong about that.
Andy Isabella had 5 games where he had 170 yards or more this year.
And did UMass make a bowl game?
What's that?
Did UMass even make a bowl game?
No, they went 4-8.
No, they went 4-8.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Like, I don't know. That always kind of amazes me when guys put together great individual seasons but their team.
He had 9 catches for 303 yards and 2 touchdowns against Liberty. 33.7 yards per catch.
Not too shabby.
That's unreal.
That's great.
This is one of the things that I think is crazy about Isabella. I mean, it happened when they came down here and played FIU. He put up all those numbers, and there was like, I want to say it was 5 or 6 games in which they played 3 different quarterbacks. Let's see if I can remember all 3 of them. It should have been Andrew Ford, Ross Comus, and Michael Curtis.
That's so like, right.
It wasn't even like there was consistency with the quarterback, but he just balled out. And I was shocked that FIU, quote unquote, held him to like 64 yards, you know, because everyone was torching that defense this year. He still scored a touchdown, but yeah, I mean, like, dude is a baller. So no disrespect to Reggie White Jr. from Monmouth, but I think Andy Isabella is in a class of his own as far as small school receivers.
Zero argument with that. No, I'm just bringing up Reggie because of the name. That was the only reason why I bring up Reggie.
All right. I got you. It's still there. I got you.
Does anybody else have any other small school guys they want to talk about? I got nobody.
Yeah, Isabella was the main guy in the Natalie.
Yeah, I have no argument with that. Isabella was the main guy. I mean, the only other thing that I really wanted to harp on was more of like, there are some schools that I've popped up that I'm like, I've never heard before. So there was a kid from Malone. never heard of that school. Washburn, never heard of that school. Sioux Falls, never heard of that school.
That's a D2, I believe.
It has to be.
I'm pretty sure Washburn's a D2. I don't know about the I don't know about the other ones.
Sioux Falls is D2.
Yeah, I thought I actually had kind of heard of Sioux Falls, but I know it wasn't a D1 program. And then I saw one from a quarterback, you know, so they obviously get more hype than anything, but Central Connecticut State. So it kind of made me think, out of the past couple of years, like, I feel like we're seeing a lot of these, like, super random schools kind of pop out as of late. Like, last
probably,
year, four
guys
State,
that fly under
like,
the radar.
I mean, obviously.
Or like guys that went to bigger schools, either got in trouble or just didn't make it, went to a smaller school and have like the physical traits to do something and just don't get the recognition because they're on whatever Central Connecticut State, who's probably like the best team in Connecticut at this point if you think about it. Not like UConn's really pushing for anything.
I hope they play each other this year. Well, they don't have a quarterback anymore. Well, neither does UConn either.
Yeah. The other Blue Devils.
There you go.
I think they're the Blue Devils.
You can't just throw that out there and not know.
I can do whatever I want, Joe.
Well, you know what?
I'm just kidding. I'm like 90%.
I am the host. You are not. They are the Blue Devils.
You're right.
For you.
Okay. There we go.
We do what I say, okay?
You're right. I'm sorry. This is your show. You're the captain now.
Well, I think since Eric did most of the research, do you have anybody else you want to talk about, Eric?
I'm calling on the fly, brother. I'm pretty much tapped out.
Cool, cool. All right. Well, let's wrap this thing up then. Thanks, everybody, for putting up with our nonsense and, you know, Joe's drive to, I don't know, are you driving to come see me or where are you going? You're doing a lot of blinkers. So are you just driving around the block?
Yeah, sometimes I just kind of drive around the block when I podcast to get in the good headspace.
Perfect.
No, I got errands to run. Sorry. But anyway. Nova. Yeah. Because I'm a true professional.
There you go. That's what we like to hear. All right. So if you guys aren't following us already, make sure you follow in Underdog Dynasty. Make sure you tune into Joe Talk and Conference USA. You guys need a name for your part of the podcast. Too bad Eric's name's not Joe. You could call it Joe Talk as well.
I wasn't privileged enough to join the little Joe Club there.
We'll honor you today. You're an honorary Joe.
Is your middle name Joseph?
No, it is not Joseph. I already have the whitest name ever to begin with, but it's not Joseph, so.
Perfect. Oh, man. All right. So, like I said, if you are not listening to us already, give us a listen. We kind of know what we're talking about every once in a while, unless you ask, like, certain fan bases, which I have already named at the beginning of this show. If you want to follow these guys, you can follow Joe Londrigan at @JoeHile_. Not sure why the underscore is necessary at the end, but it is. Eric Henry, you can follow at @EricC_. Again, I don't know. It must be a Conference USA. It's underscores.
Gotta be. Don't understand that either.
Joe Serpico, you can follow him at Joe Serp. Myself. You don't have to follow me if you don't want to, but if you do, Joe Brovac, pretty simple. No underscores, none of that nonsense. No, none of that. Just none of that. We don't need that here. Leave us a review. Say good things about our podcast. Say bad things about Joe and Eric. No, I'm just kidding. Don't do that. Say whatever you want. Good or bad, it actually helps us. We actually really appreciate it. Even if we only hear the negative side, gives us something to either laugh at or something to work on. And with that, just like Lonzo Ball and Big Baller Brand or Magic Johnson with the Los Angeles Lakers, we are out.
Did you tell people to give us a listen at the end of the podcast?
Right. Yes, yeah, it did.
In the future.
Okay, just making sure.
I heard that too, and I was like, wait.
Yeah, give us a listen from the previous 45 minutes.
They seem to be listening already.